welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Yeah! Hey. Happy Monday!
And a happy Monday to you. Hey, thanks, Don, very much. Don, how is Pledge Drive going, right? I mean, this is the big thing right now, right? We're doing Pledge Drive. Is it going pretty well for the station?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. We can always do better.
This and is the hour.
Yeah, this is the power hour?
Yes.
This is the power hour.
Fantastic.
Right, this is where we do it, right?
Yes, sir.
And Mandy and Bob back together again.
Yep. Great to see you.
Yep, nice to see you in the studio with our Vista volunteers, right?
Yeah.
Our Hurricane Kids. What do we call you? You guys have nicknames? Is that Hurricane Kids? Yeah, Rebecca and Chanel. You like that, Chanel? You like the Hurricane Kids?
Yeah, and it's catchy.
It's catchy.
They're working, kids.
They're working on recovery.
Young adults.
Compared to you.
Young adults.
Compared to you, Mandy. They are kids, right?
What are you saying?
I'm saying you're like 2-3 years older than they are. So, welcome to Growing Up in America. It's going to be a good program. It is the Power Hour. We're pledging out here. We're making sure that you guys can call in and support community radio, supporting Growing Up in America, 713-526-5738. But we have a great lineup of guests as well, Mandy.
We do. It's going to be a fantastic hour. Kick us off.
So right off the bat, we're going to have our data head, human trafficking attorney Caroline Roberts is going to join us. The number today, Mandy, 57.
57.
Heinz 57.
What could it mean?
That's an old thing. As a youngster, you don't even know Heinz 57, do you?
I do.
Oh, you do. Okay.
I do. The ketchup bottle. My son has his name on a Heinz 57 ketchup bottle. That's interesting. Apparently, you can order that.
Kyler or Mason?
Yeah, Kyler.
Because I've seen Mason jars before.
Oh, yeah.
But I've never seen Kyler
jars. You know what? That's a good idea. He doesn't have one, so I should get him a Mason jar. Have a Kyler Heinz 57 and then a Mason jar. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's great. Okay. So the number is 57. Stay tuned and find out what that means.
Yep.
And then after Data Head, we're going to have Dustin Reinders, who's the supervising attorney with Disability Rights Texas. And he's going to be joining us today talking about special education funding and school safety. All very important and extremely timely.
Dustin's all about it. He's our good buddy.
He's wonderful.
Yeah, he's a top-notch attorney, and the work that he's doing over at Disability Rights is fantastic. We're going to be talking with Carlos Villegas after that. He's the staff researcher at the Kinder Institute. We're going to talk about FEMA and Hurricane Harvey recovery.
He's doing a lot of great stuff.
Yeah. We'll tie the Hurricane Kids into this, and so they could talk about it as well.
Young adults.
Mm-hmm.
And then today on our social conscience scale.
Yeah, this is good. I'm looking forward to this.
So normally we would say call in and give us your opinion.
But that's Pledge Drive.
But you could call in and pledge and then give us your opinion.
Excellent
that works,
idea.
Right?
Excellent idea.
Okay. And today our thumbs up, thumbs down, age limits for trick-or-treaters.
Yeah, some people don't like the idea, you know, like when the sort of the older kids come along, you maybe no costume, and they come in and they say, trick-or-treat, give me something good to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people don't like that.
When they're not even in a costume?
When they're not in a costume, or when they're older.
I know.
Maybe they're not from the neighborhood.
We'll see. There's lots to discuss, but it's interesting.
You, my door, everyone gets candy.
Oh, that's nice. My door, too.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a serious issue in Virginia. Trick-or-treaters must be under 13. And if they're older than that, listen, could face fines or up to 6 months in jail if caught not complying with the Virginia law.
Those Virginians. Harsh. They're harsh, right?
So it won't be thumbs up, thumbs down, jail time. I think that's kind of lame. Like, but we can
Virginia's
say, should
for
there
lovers,
be an age limit?
Virginia's for lovers and jail teenagers who were trick-or-treating when they were 14. It's a really harsh state.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we're both thumbs down on this.
I mean, Colin.
But we're going to make it.
I have actually. Should there be an age limit to trick-or-treaters? I have opinions about that.
You do?
Yeah.
You have opinions.
I mean, I'm pretty opinionated.
Much. Yeah. You're pretty much opinionated.
Unlike you.
Unlike me.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty pablum. Pretty straight. All right, our final guest, we're going to be in the studio here with our good friend Chanel Brown, Rebecca Harms. They are AmeriCorps Vistas. They're here working strictly on hurricane recovery, and they're in the studios with us for the whole hour, but we'll devote the last part of the show to talking about hurricane recovery. And you guys have been doing a lot of stuff around this, right? I mean, I was at a conference recently moderating a panel, and you guys were there learning about it, but you've been all over town looking at some of the hurricane stuff. Mm-hmm. Rebecca, you've been enjoying this, right?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
yeah. We've been going to meetings every week all over Houston.
And are we in recovery, Chanel? Or, I mean, are we there yet?
I think we still have a long way to go.
We do, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the key thing. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people think, especially if you don't live, if you live in neighborhoods that weren't really impacted, you think, oh, things are back to normal, but they're really not. I mean, there's still little ghost neighborhoods, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Hard. So we'll be talking a little bit about that, Mandy.
Sounds like a fantastic show today.
Yeah, it's going to be a great one. So I think you're ready to do a little date ahead.
Let's do it.
So poetry in motion, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about Caroline Roberts, top human rights and human trafficking attorney in the state of Texas. Caroline, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. You like my introduction of you, Caroline?
Loved it.
I know you did. I know you did. So the number today, Caroline?
So the number is 57.
57, Mandy. Does it have anything to do with Heinz 57?
No.
Normally you throw out Bob's age.
Ooh, 57.
Kind of close.
Very good. Yeah, it's a little old. A little old. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Thanks very much, Mandy. Mandy, are you 57?
My soul is.
I'm an old soul. You're an old soul. But yeah, you're more like 37, right? Mm-hmm. You're pretty young. So, all right, what is it, Caroline?
So, anti-Semitic incidents increased by 57% from 2016 to 2017.
Wow.
And that is the most recent year of data that we have.
So was that a bad year, or is it continuously increasing? Do we know? I mean, 57% is a lot.
No, it's a bad
year. Is this a
year.
Trend that we are seeing across America?
Yeah, it's the biggest increase that we've seen since 1979. And there were incidents in all 50 states.
And what do we think this is all about, Caroline? Is it, you know, sort of a harsher tone coming out of Washington? Is it there a little bit of freedom to be harsh and to be to voice your hate? Or what's going on? What do we attribute this to?
I think we can all agree that civility has not been really, our political leaders have not been exemplars of civility in the past few years.
To say the least.
But mm-hmm. One thing that I thought was really interesting is that a number of these incidents have actually been in schools and on college campuses, and that those incidents doubled for the second year in a row amongst young people. So I think that's something that I did not expect and something we need to really think about.
This makes me so sad.
It does.
And what happened this weekend, I mean, it's just, it's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something, I mean, when we think about this, Caroline, is there something that we should be doing differently in our schools to sort of curtail these types of hatred, this type of hatred?
Well, definitely we need to be educating kids on the fact that these hate crimes and these incidents are happening, what that even means, what that looks like, and how, you know, America was founded on a bunch of different people coming together and making something, you know, unlike the world had seen, and that we are all, you know, we are all in this together. We all need to treat each other with respect. And I think that that's something that we should absolutely be teaching in schools.
Let me ask Chanel and Rebecca, our AmeriCorps that are in the studio. Chanel, from your perspective, you know, being a young person, pretty much fresh out of school, is there something we should be doing differently in our schools addressing hatred?
Honestly, I really do think it does start at home.
Yeah.
And I think that if anybody, it should be the parents and the adults who are trying to step in and intervene and tell their kids or tell just tell kids that it's not okay to be doing this type of hatred or bullying or any type of bullying, honestly.
Rebecca, any thoughts from your perspective?
I feel like at schools we should celebrate each other's differences and spread acceptance with people from different backgrounds.
Yeah, Amanda,
did you have conversations at school?
At my university, we had a lot of conversations around this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where, again, Mercyhurst?
Mm-hmm.
Mercyhurst.
Mm-hmm.
That's the powerhouse of Buffalo, New York. Right? is that right? Buffalo? Is it Buffalo?
Erie, Pennsylvania.
Erie, Pennsylvania. Yeah, it's on a Great Lake. Hey, Mandy, it does seem, though, like this, and Caroline, this conversation has been happening for years, right? We thought we were getting over this stuff, right?
I agree. And when I can speak for what goes on in my kids' school, right? And I know that they're educating people about different cultures and different religions. And one is education, one's compassion, another one's tolerance, right? And respect of diversity, which is a great thing. And I agree with you, Chanel. I mean, at home, we need to talk about respecting other people. But the reality, I think there's a lot of parents who don't know much about other cultures and what's going on, and that kids are learning this information through school, right? It's opportunity for kids to teach the parents on what's going on. I don't know.
This is depressing to me, though,
because
I feel like we've done a lot of this. I mean, I feel like we've spent so much time in the schools doing this sort of stuff, and then it's like we've we've gone forward 5 steps and now we're back 10 steps. It's just sort of ridiculous, right?
Right. Well, I think a lot of people have lost their
forward
tolerance.
Forward 1 step, back 2 steps, I guess, is the equivalent. But yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think social media doesn't help. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great platform for some things, right? But it also allows for other conversations to happen more easily, unfortunately.
Caroline, is there an easier answer to this?
No, there isn't. I guess the one kind of maybe positive in all of it is that for as many, incidents of hate and violence that we've seen, we've also seen so many movements of acceptance and, people telling their stories. And so, we can also look at the positives in the past few years.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
That's nice.
Caroline Roberts, she is a human trafficking attorney at Children at Risk, doing the good work. Thank you, Caroline, for being our data head today.
No problem. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. And, hey, it's Pledge Drive week. And so 713-526-5738. Mandy, before we get to Dustin, let's talk a little bit about Pledge Drive and the need for our people. People who listen to Growing Up in America, people who happen to listen to KPFT on a regular basis, this is the time that you need to pledge $50, $100. It's real important that we keep community radio on the air. It's important that we keep Growing Up in America on the air. This is a unique show.
It is unique. And just it kind of brings back to the conversation that we just had, right?
Yeah.
Understanding, allowing people to have a voice and educating listeners on what's going on in the community that may be like you,
right.
May not be, right?
Right?
But
right.
there's a common thread that brings everyone together. And so when we're talking about parenting or education or health, it's something that impacts us all. And so it's focused on kids and there's no other radio show like this. So you need to call in and give your support. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Call in and support Growing Up in America.
And I will match it. If you call in, whether you give $25, $50, or $100, for the first $200 pledged, I will go ahead and match it. And that will help us get to our goal. And Mandy and I work hard for our money, but we really believe in community radio. We really believe in growing up in America.
That's right. And I give every month. They make those payments very easy. So
yeah, it's very easy.
If you can call in a couple $100, $100, you can break that up if you don't want to do it all at once.
Yeah, yep. You could do $12 a month for a couple months.
There you go.
Supporting Growing Up America. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. This is the time to give. So, hey, Don, as people give, are there any sort of packages that have been super interesting that people have been getting for calling in and giving during this pledge season?
Yeah, currently a lot of people are liking the hoodie for $120.
A hoodie?
Oh. Yeah, it's a KPFT Peace hoodie. It's a black hoodie.
We talked about that last week.
Zip up. It's perfect for the weather. Probably not today because it's hot, but you know, every other day it's cold,
yeah,
it will work perfect.
Do you have one yourself, Don?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I dirtied it up, but one day I will clean it.
Yeah.
Laundry.
But you enjoy having it, right?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Very good. So, and that's just a mere $120 you get that, right?
Did I say 120? I'm sorry, 150.
150. Yeah. Okay, 150 you get that. Mandy, you may want one of those, right?
I do. I want one of those.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Mandy, we got you for 150. All right. Anybody else in the room wants to get a...
713-526-5738. And Don is going to... You'll autograph on the inside, won't you, Don?
Oh, that's no problem.
Yeah, and Mandy will as
Ooh.
Well. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Give us a call. This is Pledge Hour. We'll be here all hour. But until then, why don't we do a little bit of Dustin Reinders? And do we have a little...
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
I like that song.
Dustin, is that your favorite song?
I
right
like
there?
That. That's mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
Very good. Well.
Dustin Reinders is with us. He's the big cheese over at Disability Rights Texas, the supervising attorney. Dustin, my man, how you been doing?
You know, these are tough times, but there's some things to be optimistic about, so I'm doing well.
Very good. Very good. So I wanted to talk a little bit about special ed funding. I know the TEA has asked for more money over the next 3 years. What does that mean? And sometimes in this state, we ask for more money, but really we're not getting even close to where we should be funding. And so more money doesn't really mean we move up in the rankings. It just means we're getting a little bit more money. What does this represent?
So, you know, it grabbed a lot of headlines when TEA said that they needed $3 billion more dollars in special ed funding alone over the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. And the remarkable thing about that is that's not what advocates are asking for. That's even what TEA is saying that they need. And, of course, this is only possible that they would make that request to comply with the Department of Education's findings that Texas is violating the rights of students with disabilities and is not providing a free, appropriate public education throughout our state. Texas has had to tell the feds that, and if they continue to have to tell the feds that, we could be in danger of losing federal money. So it's really important to TEA to be able to kind of change that narrative and begin to say that they're actually providing an appropriate education to kids throughout our state. You know, this all goes back to that 8.5% cap where 400,000 students were denied special ed. So we know if we get those numbers back up to where the national average is, it's going to be expensive, and so we're at least optimistic that with those Department of Education findings, there should at least be some pressure on the legislature to do the right thing for children with disabilities in this upcoming school year.
It is. I am optimistic that things will change. What's frustrating is that it seems like Texas moves the needle a little bit or just enough not to get in trouble, and it's always the feds coming down saying you need to do something rather than us taking care of our own, right?
Yeah.
So one question I have for you, Dustin, I mean, and do you agree with that statement, Dustin?
I do agree with it, and you know, an example of that is not only do we not have enough special ed funding in Texas, but we allocate it in a silly, outdated way that only a few states still do, and that's that we base the amount of money that we pay schools to educate students with disabilities based on what type of placement they're in. So we pay more if you're in a more restrictive setting. Well, we know we've tried to move away from that and get more kids with disabilities in regular classrooms.
Wow, I hate when that happens.
Hopefully he'll
call
back.
So we lost. Yeah. So Laura will give him a call back, and we'll try to get him back.
But what's exciting, and I feel that people talk about special education, but we haven't really made it one of the priorities that all kids get a good education, right? And it's there's just lots of room. And what I was going to ask him, which hopefully he'll be on in a second, is that we know that there's a school finance commission.
Yeah.
Dustin, are you there?
I'm back.
Okay.
Oh, good, good.
So
he was very rude. He hung up on us. I don't understand what that was all about.
So the school finance commission, right, has been meeting. Are you optimistic? What are some of the conversations there? I've seen special education and some of those line items. Do you think that they're going to make the move and provide what is needed?
you know, I hope that we have an increased amount, and I hope we get a new formula. And so right now, everything's based on where a child sits, and they only get significantly more funding if the child's in a really restrictive environment, which makes it really difficult for schools to appropriately accommodate students who could be in the regular classroom, for example, or on regular campuses. And so we're really happy anytime we can agree with educators who work on the other side of advocacy sometimes, and the T-CASE, which is the special ed administrators, and Disability Rights Texas have both agreed that the current way that we fund special ed is a backwards formula, that it's outdated, and it's time for a change. And we've kind of agreed on ways to do it and base funding on the needs of a student and not where they sit. So I'm going into session optimistic that we're going to have more funding and that hopefully we're finally going to update our formula as well.
Yay.
Hey, Dustin, you talked about the 8.5% cap. And so what that is that the state was saying that really we could only fund – we only have 8.5% of our student population that is special ed, and that's what we're going to fund. The reality, though, I mean, when we look nationally, when you look at your average school, about what percentage of the children will need some sort of special ed education 13, attention?
13%. 13%. And, you know, that difference may not sound huge, but when you go across the full state, we're talking about 400,000 students that were left out.
Yeah, that's a lot of kids.
Yeah, that is a lot of
and
kids.
When we look at those kids, I tend to think, and I want you to correct me on this, that a lot of times it's affluent, squeaky wheel parents who are going to be asking, you know, advocates, real advocates for their kids that are going to be asking for that money. And then it's a lot of parents who are busy working that don't get a chance to advocate for their children. And those are the kids that sometimes miss out. Is that right? Or is that.
It's absolutely right. And, you know, in schools, we try to pride ourselves on being data-driven, but nowhere are we less advanced than in how we identify children as needing special education. And what I mean is that we're still basing this all on referral. So someone has to be the one to kind of make that referral that a child needs evaluated. And so when we think of, like, all the ways we could be using computers to look at warning signs of, you know, your test scores, your attendance, your disciplinary record, all of the other indicators that a child may need evaluated to see what's going on, and we don't see that being done real proactively. And so you're exactly right. Too often the responsibility falls on parents who have so much else going on to even kind of research and figure out what it is they think their child may need to make that referral.
And our final question, Dustin, are we going to get to that point where those 400,000 children who have been denied special ed, are they going to be covered in the next year or so?
Well, you know, I think it's going to be a long journey to find everyone and serve them. And the reason is because a whole generation of educators were given kind of misinformation about, you know, delaying and denying evaluation to students. And so it's harder to change kind of the mindsets of people throughout the state on what to do when a child is struggling. And so for that reason, I think it'll take longer than a year, but we're doing all we can to make sure it happens. The other delays we have is that some student groups have been disproportionately impacted, like students with dyslexia. When the cap was instituted, we saw almost all of the children with dyslexia move out from under special ed and begin to see, you know, receive services outside of those protections. And so we're in the process now of trying to retrain all of the districts about the fact that dyslexia is a learning disability that you can be eligible for special ed for. And it's just so important because that's the only way that parents get their rights to challenge the education if they have concerns about it. And it's also the only way that schools get extra funding to provide quality services.
Well, and it's so important, talking about dyslexia, right, that there are some key supports that can be put in place, and those kids can be successful, right? So making sure that they have the appropriate stepping stones is so important. And last thing, because I know that we have to go, but for parents, do you have any tips for parents? Because you're talking about referrals. If parents have a question, maybe they don't know how to advocate, Bob, right, when you're talking about it. I mean, can they just make a request, and would an evaluation have to be given?
You know, I think probably the number one thing I wish parents thought of more is creating a paper trail. So with requesting evaluation, the Texas rules say that if you submit your request for evaluation in writing, the district must respond to it within a certain time frame. Unfortunately, if you make an oral request, there's none of those specifics. So parents more naturally talk out their concerns. They have a parent-teacher conference or a meeting with a principal or an administrator, and that doesn't trigger any of those really specific deadlines. There's a lot of self-advocacy resources available at disabilityrights.org, and so I encourage families to go there and learn more about how to be an advocate for their kids.
Dustin Reinders is the supervising attorney with Disability Rights Texas. Dustin, thank you for what you do each and every day, and thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you both.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT Pacifica Radio. Want to talk a little bit about the hurricane? Does that sound good, Mandy? You ready for that? Let's go.
Yes, we have.
Yes. On the line with us is Carlos Villegas. Carlos is our good buddy. He's a staff researcher over at the Kinder Institute. Carlos,
Hi,
how you been doing, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Very good. Very
Great.
Good. Hey, you've been doing a lot of research on the hurricane, haven't you, Carlos?
Yes, sir, I have.
Yeah, yeah. What's your newest stuff?
So we're looking at kind of reflecting back on the hurricane, thinking about how organizations were responding. And one of the things that was really clear is that a lot of the data was missing, or at least it was delayed. People wanted to respond. Obviously, we know we want to get to our socially vulnerable first, children, elderly. We want to get to them first, but what wasn't available was the geography of the storm, right? Well, during Hurricane Harvey, and it's not the first storm where this has happened, but there was a lot of social media activity as well as like these crowdsourced websites that were popping up. And we wanted to see if this was a potential avenue for public organizations, government organizations to leverage this information to get more data.
Go ahead,
Well, so are you talking about you're gathering this data? So we had the hurricane, and then you and Rice University gathered data and research to, are you saying, to inform strategic plans moving forward?
Like, but getting the data from Twitter, I think that's and from social media. I mean, are you able to gather a lot of data? And should FEMA have done a lot more in terms of gathering data through social media, Carlos?
You know, this is something that hasn't really been done in the United States, at least. There's other countries like Australia that have leveraged information like this from Twitter before more effectively. But it's something new. Should they have? They definitely, a lot of the local agencies would have benefited from knowing this information sooner than it actually happened. And it is something that I think hopefully this piece gets the conversation rolling on how our local institutions and how our federal institutions like FEMA can leverage this information better. So when the next one happens, because we don't want it to happen, but
it will.
It will. When the next one happens, we're prepared for it. We have the system in place to collect this information as it's being disseminated rather than academics reflecting on it like we did a year later, thinking, how could this have been better managed.
But I think it is interesting, right, that you guys are finding that a lot of the social media reported hurricane damage was never really reported by FEMA, right? I mean, there is significant people were going online, whether it be Twitter or otherwise, they're reporting damage that FEMA is not really capturing.
Absolutely. I mean, in both cases, we use crowdsourced rescue and we use Twitter in this study. And in both of them, it's roughly about half of it was missed by FEMA in both cases. And, you know, when the disaster happens, people are freaking out. They're nervous. They're anxious. Sometimes they can't get through the regular sources. And that's why they're communicating on Twitter and crowdsourced rescue. They call 911 and nobody's picking up because they don't have the manpower to handle all those calls. That's why all this information is on Twitter, Facebook, and et cetera.
Right. Well, and it's helpful, right, on trying to get the information. So what is FEMA saying about this? Are they excited about the data that you're collecting, and are they strategizing for a new plan in the future?
Well, the conversations we've had has been mostly with local agencies, and there is definitely a lot of positive reception to this, with local agencies wanting to learn how to leverage this information. And of course, their biggest concern is that maybe they don't have the knowledge or know-how to actually do it themselves. And that's why we bring up as a of the proposal is saying it doesn't have to be the public agency. It can be a partnership, the private institution, the Twitter or Facebook, the private one with the government organization, and a research institute in the middle that can house this information. This three-way partnership will alleviate the concerns of the private organizations, their privacy concerns.
Yeah.
And it alleviates the public organizations' a lack of knowledge or ability or the manpower to actually do this kind of analysis.
Chanel, Rebecca here in the studio. I mean, you guys have been studying the hurricane as well, just like Carlos. Have you seen people talk about this whole idea about social media really being sort of a key part of the storm? I know in a panel that we talked around, we talked about social media in terms of the way that sort of information was getting passed. But did you do you find that social media was a big part of this last hurricane?
Yes, I read an article about this exact thing and how social media can fill in information gaps that other organizations miss, and it's a good source.
Yeah, Chanel?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Rebecca, and I just wonder if social media were as prominent during Katrina or Tropical Storm Allison, you know, what the impacts could have been, you know? So.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Carlos, one last question. We've seen also the power of social media. You know, I was touring in Rockport and Port Aransas and Beaumont, and they talked about how social media was, you know, like a lot of conspiracies were being passed around. And we saw a New York Times report that after Hurricane Michael in the Panhandle, a lot of conspiracy was sort of passed around. I guess it could be good and it could be bad as well, right?
Right. I mean, there is a lot of false information and rumors that's being spread with these events. But what we really find is when this misinformation happens is right at the beginning, right before the actual storm happens or the event happens, and afterwards when the recovery phase. If you're able to isolate this correctly, the best way, you actually don't get a lot of misinformation.
Yeah.
So it's anticipation, survival mode, people are on point. That's what
right.
I hear.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah, when people are in crisis mode, they don't think about spreading false rumors. They want to get the best information, correct information. And in fact, something that the literature finds on this is when there's an event like this and there's false information being spread, people actually shut it down really quick.
Very good. Carlos Villegas, he's a researcher over with the Kinder Institute doing some research on social media and FEMA. Carlos, thanks so much for being on the program. Thank you so much for what you're doing, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right,
thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT, Pacifica Radio.
During the Power Hour.
With Mandy and Dr. Bob.
Yeah.
Mandy's the star.
Power Hour. Call in.
713-526-5738. Don, do we know if anyone's called in? Do we know this at all? If anyone's called, you don't know. You don't know what's going on. You're just doing the job. You're just like engineering the show.
You don't want the answer.
So, but my guess is lots of people are calling in. We need you to call in as well. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. This is when our regulars need to call in. This is the day we need them, Mandy.
It's true, and there's so much going on. I mean, we're talking about Hurricane Harvey, and the reality is some people are probably really interested in how's the recovery going. Some people are probably like, I'm over it, right? It happened a long time ago. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't hear the truth of what's
right.
going on. But we have the legislative session coming up, and there's several issues that we'll be focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
And just like Dustin was able to give tips to parents on how can you be a better parent and advocate for your child in schools, how can you be a great parent and advocate for our community in Austin? It's just a great venue, opportunity to hear everything about children, and this is the only radio show that can do it.
This is the only one, Mandy.
There we go.
Just you and I.
Trying.
And our legions of followers and those who work on the program to make sure that you and I look good. Right? That's what happens, right? So 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Give us a call. Give us a pledge, $25, $50, $100. We take plastic. We take pledges. It's
cash.
Cash.
Paper.
Just
checks.
Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is accepted. So
Venmo.
Give us a call, 713-526-5738. Hey, you ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down?
Mm-hmm.
Boom! Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Thumbs up, thumbs down. What do you got for us today, Mandy?
Age limits on trick-or-treaters. So anyone out there, should they just, regardless of their age, be allowed to trick-or-treat, or should we put a cap to it?
Yeah, what do we think about this? What's so the state limit? Of Virginia, is the state of Virginia thinking about doing this law, this rule, or do they have this rule? Or is it just one municipality in Virginia, or is it the whole state?
Chesapeake, Virginia is one of several cities across the country.
Chesapeake.
That has imposed age limits on trick-or-treaters.
So it's Chesapeake. Laura's our producer. Laura, is it just Chesapeake?
There's other cities across the nation, but Chesapeake was one of the main ones.
All right. So in Chesapeake.
It's one of several cities.
So Laura, I get this right. If you're 14 years old and in Chesapeake you show up and you trick-or-treat, an adult who's giving out candy could say, hey, you're not 13 or younger, and
the
police can come arrest you?
You can get a fine or up to 6 months in jail, actually.
Yeah, 6 months in jail.
Who would arrest a kid for
trick-or-treat? Nope, you're going to jail. Sorry. That's so stupid.
Oh, my goodness.
It's idiotic is what it is.
We should try to get them on the show.
That's a city council that didn't have much to do that day. So, Laura, can we get them on our program?
We should reach out. Why? Why did they do that? Maybe something happened. But
Laura,
I don't know.
I could see Laura's probably cringing. Like, yeah, let's.
Well, clearly not today.
I hope
today.
That Bob and Mandy forget that.
We're not going to.
They don't want to do that. Mm-mm. So, what do you think, Mandy, on this idea? So, I know that you live out in the lands, right?
Uh-huh.
You live out far away.
No, I don't.
You live out in the lands, though, right? Sugar Land?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Sugar Land, Pear Land, the Woodlands, you know, the lands.
Who uses Mayor Turner stuff.
No, there's a lot of people who use that. But you live out there. Do kids that are over 13 go trick-or-treating in your neighborhood? Because I live here, you know, in the city, and I have lots of trick-or-treaters that are older.
That are older?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There might be some, but they're usually with the younger ones as well, right? Let's be real. I see a lot of parents dressed up trick-or-treating with their kids, but older siblings.
But they're with their kids,
right? That are going with the younger ones.
But I can't tell you. My daughter, when she was 15, 16, 17, she and her little friends from high school were taking their pillowcases and they were going through
the West U
neighborhoods.
It's not that, see, and that's even greedier. It's not the little
it's
bag.
Free candy.
Right?
Is
it's
that,
like,
is
no,
such
let's
a thing
bring
as greed when it's free candy?
A pillowcase to get candy.
No, it's all about the candy.
And it's late night. So, I mean, clearly my favorite is the younger ones, but I have to be honest, I like to go trick-or-treating with my kids, so I leave the candy on my front porch.
Is it gone when you get there?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Yeah.
It just depends.
So
but then when I get there, then I'll bring it inside, but then I cut it off. Like the older kids, I mean, they don't mind ringing your doorbell at 10 o'clock. I'm like, that's too late, people.
Do you turn off your lights and close the curtains and everything? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's
usually
an important thing
at 8:30.
Like if you close everything off, then it's sort of the signal, yeah, don't bother here. I have little Halloween jack-o'-lantern mm-hmm. lights around the door.
Mm-hmm.
Unplug those and.
But sometimes they still ring your doorbell, and you know who do? The older kids.
Older kids.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But I give away, as you know, I give away king size, mm-hmm. the huge, giant candy bars.
Do you have your candy bars already?
Yes. And everyone gets one. Every single kid gets one.
So the Sanborn resident.
No, no.
At.
No, no. And so, Chanel, did you do trick-or-treating? Up until what age did you do trick-or-treating?
I think I was about 13 when I stopped.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I passed out candy when I was about 15. But the trick-or-treaters, a lot of them were my age at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have to say
that. I mean, that's high school. Middle school is kind of when you should be aging.
You would have gotten away with that, right? You look super young.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I get told that I look like 15. Or 16 now, and I'm like 23, so.
Wow.
What about you, Rebecca?
I trick-or-treated into high school.
In high school? Like,
yeah.
How old?
Sophomore, junior year with my friends. Not a lot, but we'd go the street.
And people would give it to you. Would they give you a lot of candy? See, I give, like, usually I give out 2-3 pieces of candy to the kids. The older ones, I give out, like, one. It depends. Unless it's the end of the night and you got to get rid of the candy, then you're like, here's a handful. King size.
So like we're thumbs down on this age thing, right?
I mean,
all of us. Chanel, you thumbs down?
I'm definitely thumbs down.
Rebecca, you're thumbs down?
I'm thumbs down.
Don, how you feeling on this one?
I'm kind of thumbs up. I don't think you should go to jail, but I feel like high school is too old to be going trick-or-treating.
I think everyone should be able to do it. Don?
There should be no age limit on trick-or-treating.
No age limit on fun and feeling young, right, exactly. Don? So, Mandy, I find you wrong. 6 months in jail right there.
Yeah.
Very good.
That's ridiculous, isn't it? We're going to have them on, see if we can get someone on to explain why they chose.
713-526-5738 if you want to give us your thoughts on this one. 713-526-5738. Give us your thoughts. But if you're calling in, you have to pledge. And we need a little pledge from you. And we could see what's going on, right,
that's
Mandy?
Right. Right.
This is the time to pledge.
This is the power hour.
This is it, the power hour. With no power. We're like caught in neutral because we need more phone calls coming in. 713-526-5738.
We know this is a favorite show.
Don, does Dwayne want to push it all? Does he want to do a little bit of... does Dwayne want to help us out a little bit? Dwayne Bradley's in the studio, and I just want to know. Maybe
Dwayne is great.
He has some magic words that he might give, right? So,
Dwayne, have any?
I live to help.
I know you do, Dwayne. Dwayne Bradley, you're like a historical figure around here, aren't you, Dwayne?
Yeah, he has to get ready.
He's getting ready.
So. I have ears now.
Okay.
I hope you're saying nice things about me.
Yeah, I was saying you're like a historical figure in the here at Pacifica Radio.
Like the old man in the mountain? Yeah.
So, hey, talk to us about the Growing Up in America program, Dwayne, because in many ways... it was your watch when we conceived of this show, and
True.
You thought, this is a great idea. No one else is doing this. What is different about this show, and why should people support this program, Dwayne?
Well, first of all, it has a lot of brilliant guests and hosts and visitors. And it speaks to important issues in the community that are being addressed nowhere else in broadcast media.
Yeah.
You get things in the paper. I mean, and that's largely... through you pushing it into the paper, and you have connections with a lot of the different media, and that helps too. But there's not a show like this that's dedicated to issues related to the education system and to children and youth and human trafficking and all of the different areas, especially in the policy arena that you guys live and work. And it's important work, and KPFT lives by giving a platform to groups and individuals and ideas that have no other platform to express themselves in the broadcast media. And so that's what I saw when you walked in with this great idea. It's like, if it was on every other channel already, well, we don't need it. We need to do the things that nobody else is doing. And that's what KPFT's mission is. And I think this is a very mission-worthy program. I just wish more people would call into the phones because Jessica called in and she's up there in Little York and she's going to be styling a KPFT hoodie for dropping $20 a month into Growing Up in America because she cares about this show. I asked her if I could save it till 6 o'clock and use it on Open Journal. No, she wanted it to go to this program.
Yes, thank you,
and
Jessica.
So we appreciate that, Jessica. And she's doing it as a monthly installment. She put it on the Fantastic Plastic. Visa, Discover, American Express, and MasterCard are all quick, easy, and painless ways to share the love. This is your final Monday to help Growing Up in America. It's been successful pretty much so far, right, Don?
Right now we're at, from last number I saw, we're at 60% to goal.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. I'm telling you to get out of here.
I got to go. There's another phone ringing with your name on it, Bob.
Run.
713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Give us a call. We need your support on Growing Up in America. And thank you if you're one of those callers. We so appreciate it. Mandy and I have devoted our life to fighting the good fight for children, making sure that every child has an opportunity to be successful. And by being on these airways and getting your support, this is how we recruit people. This is how we get you to be a part of this. This is how you also make life better for children across the state of Texas. 713-526-5738. And in the studios right now, as you guys call in, we have Chanel and Rebecca, two of our Hurricane kids. These are two young people that have devoted their life their current year, right, with AmeriCorps, focusing in on Hurricane Harvey recovery. They came from out of town, both of them, saying, how can we come to Houston and volunteer and work with AmeriCorps, with Children at Risk, in terms of hurricane recovery? And Rebecca, from your perspective, what has been sort of the most striking thing, and I'll ask you the same thing, Chanel, the most striking thing as you look at this recovery, the thing that has really hit home to you the most?
I would have to see the housing need. We took a tour around Houston, and we saw all the houses that are still vacant, and we've been going to monthly housing meetings, and a lot of the organizations that meet, they talk about the housing need and the lack of housing that is still prevalent in Houston, and how many people are still displaced from the storm even over a year later.
You've seen a lot of neighborhoods that are sort of these ghost towns. Talk about walking through one of those neighborhoods and what it feels like.
It's very sad to me. There was one neighborhood that still had the red C's that were spray painted on the houses, and those were from the high floodwaters. The people on boats would go around and spray paint a red C to let others know that the house has been cleared, that there's no one else in there.
And you're, this is a year later you're seeing these C's.
Yes,
this isn't just
a year
right
later.
There. How about you, Chanel? What's been the most striking thing for you?
Probably the impact that Harvey had on education and how there are still many schools that still aren't in their original buildings. And just the impact that it had on teachers. We've just been finding that teachers have not been getting the support that they need, and a lot of them have had behavioral problems and have had suicidal thoughts, and many of them have attempted suicide.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's really heartbreaking.
That's a striking thing for me, right? I think you and I were at a session together where we heard about sort of the significant mental health problems of teachers, because it's their own family problems compounded with all the student problems right on top of them.
That's a lot. That would be completely draining, right?
Yeah.
So, and your family, right, trying to deal with them, but then knowing that you're responsible for an additional 30 children or even more than that, and how do you cope? How do you help them?
Right. And
can
if,
you?
And if the teachers aren't getting the support that they need, then most certainly the kids aren't getting the support that they need. So,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that same session we heard from Coulter Elementary, which is still in, they're not going to be back in their original building for another, what, another 2 years or something,
2020,
right?
2020.
Yeah, so it's going to be a while.
So have y'all been a part of some of the conversations with the city and their plan and a recovery? Do y'all have any updates? So you're talking about housing, right? Mm-hmm. For the longest time we were waiting for dollars. Have the dollars hit us? Are they being disseminated? Is that the big question?
So at our monthly housing meetings, it's run by the city, and they talk about how the dollars are going to be used, and they are expecting $1.1 billion through the Community Development Block Grant Disaster Relief Fund, and they're still going through the process of getting that money, and the meetings revolve around where that money is going to go to, and the organizations are giving their input.
Wow.
That's a lot. I know. And Chanel, when you're talking about education, are folks talking about Austin? So the legislature, as soon as Harvey hit, right, several people were saying use the rainy day fund or have a special session. Now, there were interim hearings. Neither of those two happened, right? There were some hearings that happened around Hurricane Harvey. Are there hopes in regards, do you feel like people are on the same page and that priorities are outlined moving forward for next session so that things can be done?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people are asking about that rainy day fund and are wanting to make sure that the funding from that fund is being implemented into Houston. And I think there's going to be even more citizen participation as legislative session comes in 2019.
What I find frustrating is that, yes, you have federal help and there's going to be a significant amount of dollars that come in.
Yeah.
But it's over a year later, and we still haven't been able to utilize those dollars. And Texas could have held a special session. We could have used the rainy day funds to, like, get families back on track with quickness, right? With speediness. And if that was housing or if that was education or services that they need, just it was heavy on my heart.
This upcoming, you mentioned the upcoming legislative session. you and I were in Austin, and we did a session, I would say just a few months after Hurricane Harvey, and I still felt like there was Harvey fatigue, right? You saw legislators that weren't from Houston. They were like, oh, basically by the look in their eyes, they were thinking, I'm so tired of hearing about Harvey. What does it mean now a year later, over a year later, and we go into a legislative session, but it's still the first legislative session after this storm? Are we going to hear the rest of the state saying, I don't want to hear about this anymore? Or do you think we're going to be able to get some stuff done around Hurricane Harvey recovery?
I hope we're able to get some stuff done, right? There were several committees that were educated during the interim over this past year. And yes, there are some public officials, some legislators who are not impacted. However, Hurricane Harvey impacted the majority of legislators. I used to have it off the top of my head, but I mean, more than 60% of House members, and the same number as around, senators as well. So clearly some districts were impacted more than others, but when you look at the population, and where the hurricane hit, that there were several districts. So we'll see. There's a lot of demands the sad thing is that if we would have addressed it during the interim, it would have been the focus of conversations. Now we're going to be entering the legislative session where, yes, Hurricane Harvey recovery is one issue along with 15 other priorities that people are trying to make.
Yeah. Very good. You want to do a little bit of Final Four with our Hurricane Kids? Does that sound good for you? All right, time to do Final Four 54 with Chanel
there
and
you
with
go.
Rebecca.
Yeah, Rebecca, you are first. The first question is, what was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
I loved Polly Pockets.
Pockets. Yeah. Wow. Did you ever accidentally swallow one?
No.
Yeah, right? Because they're so little, right?
Chanel, what was your favorite toy?
I forgot the exact name, but I think it was called Skip It, and you would put something around your ankle, and you would just skip or hop over this object.
Ball. It was a little ball.
Yeah,
on
so I was right.
You would
skip it. Right.
Swing it around.
Were you pretty good at that, Chanel?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I was pretty much a master.
Were you good at that, Mandy, when you did a little Skip It? I remember my daughter had a Skip It.
I didn't really...
I feel like I tripped when I did that.
I didn't really do Skip It. I used Pogo Ball. That was the big thing. Pogo Ball?
I had a Pogo Stick.
This one is difficult.
A Pogo Stick as well?
I didn't,
Chanel?
But I learned how to use a Pogo
Stick.
Yeah,
I was pretty good at the old Pogo Stick. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. What did you want to be when you were growing up, Chanel?
A WNBA player.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. But I realized that I was very short and sucked at basketball. So that dream died.
Next time. And Rebecca, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
A zookeeper. I love animals.
There you go.
Mandy, you wanted to be a ballerina. Is that right?
No.
Well, what did you want to be?
Growing up, what did I want to be?
You've only asked this question for 5, 6, 10 years. You don't remember?
I'm slow today.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I want to be a doctor or a nurse. When I got older, I took the test, and it was an ambulance driver.
Ambulance driver.
A paramedic.
See, there you go. Okay.
But that wasn't when I was little. Okay. All right, Rebecca, what was your favorite book to read as a child?
Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
I need to introduce you to my son. Chanel?
The Ginny B. Jones series.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
They do that in the Main Street Theater, does the Ginny B. Jones theater stuff.
Oh, nice.
So no one's allowed. I have another question. No one's allowed to go trick-or-treating because we're all too old, but is anyone dressing up for Halloween?
I dressed up for the Montrose Pub Crawl over the weekend.
Yeah? What were you?
I was Amadeus Mozart. Oh, yeah, it was very good. I had this beautiful white powdered wig and a red cape.
So your wife, Ellen, always dresses
up.
She was a
cupcake.
A cupcake.
Yeah, she was good. But, you know, you go out in Montrose for that pub crawl, it's just all sorts of wild costumes.
Yeah.
Pretty fantastic.
And your family was in.
Yeah, and they dressed up.
What did they think?
My brother used one of my old the Marching Owl Band outfits, and then the other one had a gorilla mask, and he wore a Viking helmet on top of that. So
he didn't wear that very long.
It was hot.
Yeah,
it was hot. No, he wore it for the whole time, though.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. With the pub crawl? Could he do that?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah. And so final question. Your favorite book to read, Chanel, as a kid?
Oh.
Your favorite book as a kid?
Oh, I thought we answered that one already.
Did you?
Junie B. Jones.
Oh, that was your favorite movie. Your favorite TV show. Let's go with TV show.
TV show? Okay. SpongeBob, probably.
SpongeBob, Rebecca?
The Amanda Show.
Amanda Show.
I didn't know there was an Amanda Show.
Yeah, Mandy. Oh, yeah. You didn't know about the Amanda Show?
With Amanda Bynes.
Amanda Bynes.
Mm-hmm. Can I find it still? Is it still on?
Maybe.
You might be able to find it on YouTube or something.
Hey, let's spend the last couple of minutes doing Pledge Drive, guys. 713-526-5738. How are we standing right now, by the way?
Call in and pledge to
Don,
Amanda
are we looking
show.
Pretty good? Or how are we standing on this Pledge Drive
you know
right
what?
Now?
Let's do this. Dwayne Bradley, help me out on while we're standing.
Well, I'm standing tall, and I know the station is doing better and better. It's as of the latest posting on the big whiteboard out here, it's over 163,000 and rising.
Wow.
And that was late Saturday. So,
wow.
You know,
okay.
I'm sure that yesterday boosted that to, 185 easy. So we should be on the cusp of $200,000 right now. This program, however, I can only vouch for about $500 toward your overall goal.
Mm.
I do have somebody to thank, actually a couple. One is Sandra, who wanted us to thank Archer, Jack, Adam, and Emily, all children who are growing up in America.
Oh, wow.
And we heard from Dennis up in Spring, who's a longtime member, listener to KPFT, used to drive down to the old studio on Prairie Street. And heck, we moved from Prairie Street to Lovett Boulevard in the summer of 1975. So nice hearing from you, Dennis. Thanks for your contribution. He's
yes,
getting
indeed.
A hoodie also.
Yeah.
And so he's doing that $20 a month on the fantastic plastic.
Yeah, it's very nice.
It's a good way to do it.
So 713-526-5738. We're close to the goal. You want to go ahead and give us a call, 713-526-5738. And I did promise, Dwayne, early on that I would do a 200 match on this. So if we have $200 in, I could do a 200 match. So we might get up there a little bit closer, right? So
okay.
So we can do it.
We can do it, right?
Yeah. Oh,
so week in, week out, tune into Mandy and Dr. Bob doing the Growing Up in America. Always lots of good features, and but we need your support. We need to be able to do it. And Mandy, tomorrow we have a big press conference on early education, and it's just one of the things that we do right in our fight for children.
That's right. And so really looking at child care deserts, ensuring that all of our children have an equal opportunity to that solid foundation so that they can be school ready. That's right.
Yeah, that's what we do. 713-526-5738. Give us a call. Support Growing Up in America. Support Community Radio here on KPFT. We're winding down our time here, Mandy, but I want to thank Laura Rodriguez, who's a producer extraordinaire. I want to thank Don, who does such a good job here at the station. And listen, hug your kids and make sure that you do everything possible for the kids in your community. Be nice to all kids as they come over this Halloween. Every single one of those children wants just looking for a little happiness. And so you want to give them a little happiness.
Costume or no costume.
Buy a little extra
young or
candy.
Old.
Comment on how great those costumes are. Thank parents for bringing their kids out. It's going to be a little rainy this Halloween.
I might need an umbrella.
Yeah, but it's going to be fun. It's really one of my favorite holidays. I love giving out the big candy bars. Hey, we do this for children. We hope you do. We will see you next time on Growing Up in America. Still a little bit of time to give us a pledge, but thank you all for your support. See you next time here on KPFT Pacifica Radio.